Hello there, this is Graham Lynch for Comstay Live. Welcome to the show. Well, Mobile World Congress may be over for another year, but it's not forgotten. And we caught up with two Australians, sectoral experts, who went over to Barcelona and spent 4 days immersed in the show. And we have some extensive chats with both of them in this week's episode. Later on, we'll be speaking with one of those two speakers, Patrick Guerrera. He's the CEO of Regroup in Australia, which is part of MNC Saatchi. Specifically, he works on the Optus brand and managing that and has done so for quite a few years. He went over to MWC, and I was interested to hear his perspective. It's because he's not someone who works inside a telco. He works in the marketing and branding world for a telco. So he has slightly different perspectives. We'll catch up with him later. But first up, Mohammed Chowdhury, he's the CEO of Lawn Street Advisors, advisory firm he founded last year. But prior to that, he was a partner at PwC globally, working across India, Southeast Asia, Australia, and New Zealand. He's a trained economist. He's worked with the World Bank in Washington, D.C. He's worked with Vodafone and IBM across Europe, Asia, the Middle East, and Africa. He's also a visiting fellow at UTS. Very, very interesting man, actually. He's done a lot of things outside of telco as well as inside telco. He went over to Barcelona and contributed a fantastic daily column for us that you would have seen in Comstay with some of his takeouts. So I took the opportunity, I guess, to do a post-event wrap-up, a post-mortem, if you like. And I asked Mohammed, first of all, what his takeouts were on what appears to be the hot topic in 2024. Which was artificial intelligence.
Graham, I think the AI was definitely the elephant in the room this year in Barcelona. And I think what's really come out clearly for me is that AI and the network are coupled in a way that will forever be the case. Like, and that was absolutely emphasized to us this year, probably for the first time in such a firm way.
Have they figured out a way to monetize it? Did you see much evidence of that there?
Okay, it's a lovely question. Before I get into that, just one quick point as to why is AI and the network so closely coupled, because I think that will set us up for this question. So AI, the application providers and solution providers who are using AI, they will definitely need network capabilities like latency and speed and security to be able to deliver the services that are AI-enabled in the right way for customers. So that's why AI needs networks. Networks need AI, as per your question, because networks need to find ways to monetize the investment going into the networks. Now, your question is, are they going to be able to do it? And I think that I'll only say that, you know, the telecoms industry overall struggled to monetize the investments that they made in 4G and the investments that they made in 5G, and hopefully we'll come to some of that in a moment. So really, there is this opportunity to monetize AI. It will require the industry to find new ways of collaborating, working with partners in the ecosystem, and finding ways to extract value that remain with the operators. Now, some operators are already making transformations that help them move in that direction, especially one or two of the big American players, for example, one or two of the players in East Asia, such as in Korea. But overall, as an industry, it's an opportunity and it presents a big transformation challenge to be able to capture the opportunity in my mind.
Okay, now one of the other big topics at MWC was the development of 6G. Now we're almost halfway through the decade. If we consider that generations of mobile manifest over decades, we're at the 5.4G mark right now. What did you hear about 6G? How far along are we in the process of its development?
Yeah, I think we're in the early stages of really a conceptualizing and beginning to define what 6G will offer us and how it will be different and an extension and a sort of expansion from 5G. I feel a little bit guilty talking about 6G because we're only halfway through the 5G cycle, and I'm painfully aware that the industry has invested billions of dollars in building 5G networks around the world, and is still waiting for that sort of uptick in revenue that that 5G has promised us. And so it sounds a little bit premature to be talking about 6G, but I think, Graham, the real learning from 5G is that an investment cycle of this nature, which lasts about 10 years, has, in the case of 5G, taken 5 years to get us to a point where we're really talking seriously about revenue uplifts. And that's because we're getting to the point where some operators are going to now have what they call standalone 5G networks. In other words, networks that are end-to-end 5G and therefore capable of providing customers with the benefit of the performance that a 5G network offers. And we're also getting to the point where standards for 5G are sort of becoming much more established. So the talk this year, Graham, about 6G was really about how do we do 6G differently to 5G? So how do we do it in a way that means that from the beginning of the cycle for 6G, we can have standards already sort of in place, and we can have an architecture for the network in place that means that the industry can monetize 6G a lot faster into the cycle.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, one of the observations that I saw from someone at from an analyst at MWC was that the carriers have been quite reticent to roll out standalone 5G in a meaningful way. And he made the observation they don't even like to talk about what progress they've made. It's all very opaque as to the extent to which there's standalone 5G out there. And it follows from that, or sort of the logical sort of conclusion from that, is that it's difficult to monetize 5G if you actually haven't manifested it to its fullest extent. And that would be the observation I would make, that we don't really have it out there in the market in terms of its full potential. So it's a little bit difficult to talk about monetization, isn't it?
That's right. And I think what's happened here, Graham, is that expectation levels are possibly out of sync with the reality of the investment cycle. So, you know, when 5G was being introduced 5 odd years ago, I think there was a level of expectation set, you know, amongst stakeholders in the industry that 5G is going to transform the industry's fortunes. And I think back then, perhaps we weren't all aware of the journey required to get to standalone and get to standard. So I feel as though that's something which is becoming a lot clearer now. And so therefore there is some reticence in the industry. And of course, you know, industry players have invested significant sums, and many industry players face, you know, a return on invested capital today that is perhaps not even superior to their weighted average cost of capital for borrowing. So they are in a difficult, many operators are in a difficult place right now too. So it is a, it's not an easy time for the industry at the moment to be able to pass through this passage of time in 5G, let alone, you know, talk with a huge exuberance about 6G. But reality is, I think we are where we are, and 6G certainly would benefit from, you know, being able to enable the industry to monetize quicker than it, than the industry has done in the 5G cycle.
Okay, now in one of the four fantastic columns that you filed for Comms Day from MWC, you made a special reference. I found this quite interesting to the cybersecurity issues in the mobile sector right now, and I guess this follows from what we've just been talking about. You know, you've got the massively increased compute activity associated with AI, and of course the exponential growth in bandwidth that comes from 5G. So you have much greater vectors, if you like, to worry about when it comes to cybersecurity. And you noted that there was some very interesting discussions at MWC about this topic.
Yeah, I think, I mean, at Longstreet Advisors, we are thinking about cyber more in this regard, Graham, because as a topic, cyber's well established and has been for years. However, the advent and very rapid advent and adoption of AI by the software industry and solutions industry is really, I think, multiplying the pressure and need for cyber, but also making it clearer that cybersecurity is important, not just at the applications layer, but also at the network layer. And that performance at the network layer needs to now be secure by design for AI, going forward. So I think that's what's really raising the bar with respect to the cyber discussion. I mean, this year I moderated one session on how do we keep networks secure in the face of the growing adoption of AI. And I attended a CISO, Chief Information Security Officer's dinner the night before the panel, where we had about 50 CISOs from the telecoms industry around the world. And definitely, Graham, I don't think it's just hype around AI. I think there is a real desire by telcos, CISOs to step back and begin to deeply understand, okay, what specific additional capabilities do I now need to be planning for and implementing in order to be confident that I've got the cyber capability required for this new age that we seem to be entering into very quickly.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that. I guess the flip side of that as well. It's not just about the security issue, but also the ubiquity of access to these technologies. And you noted in another one of your columns for us that there'd be very interesting discussions about what's termed internationally the digital divide. In Australia, we like to a more polite phrase, I guess, digital inclusion. But you've raised a very interesting issue, I think, about the digital literacy skills that are required to negotiate this new landscape and making sure that the world's population keeps up.
Yes, exactly. I think it's gone beyond just having connectivity, if you like. And I should say that with a very strong parenthesis that it doesn't mean that we've actually connected everybody yet, because there are still several hundred million people out of our 8 billion on this earth that are not yet covered by a network. So there is a connectivity challenge that remains. That's not necessarily the case for in Australia, apart from a very, very small number of individuals, perhaps, but it is still the case in many parts of sub-Saharan Africa and Asia and a few parts of Latin America. But setting that aside, the real ground now for understanding digital inclusion moves, I think, to the capability of using connectivity, not just the connectivity itself. And that then comes down to, digital skills, confidence, having the right devices, having the affordability for services and products, having the awareness of understanding what services and products are out there and why they're important. And Graham, I'd say that these collectively are now an important measurement for inclusion, because we've moved quickly to a society where digital and the use of sophisticated digital access is quite important for undertaking lots of basic services. For example, confirming your ID, using government services, making payments, etc., etc. And that's pretty much all over the world. That's not an advanced country issue. That's sort of most countries' issue now.
Okay, now just to finish off, of course, the great thing about a big show like MWC is that you get to see, I guess, the next big things. So, what were some of the cool things that you saw in Barcelona this year?
Yeah, there was some great. It's always fun to be at MWC. Aside from all of the serious discussions, there's a lot to see and sample. And it's amazing to witness, some of those prototypes or new products that we're going to see in the marketplace very soon. I'll call on a couple. One is the Ring, which is going to be launched by Samsung either at the end of 24 or early 25, according to the people that I spoke to about the gadget. The Ring is literally what it's called, so it is literally like a ring that you'll put on your finger, and it will have 24 by 7 contact with your person. which means that it will be able to be that sort of health device that at the moment many of us undertake already with our handsets or indeed with a wearable like a watch. But the ring, I guess, intuitively is perhaps more likely to be less intrusive. You can wear it when you're asleep, you can wear it when you're in the shower, and it'll probably give you a better sense of health monitoring. Now they have said that there are going to be some other capabilities that the ring has got, some other functions and features, which I'm very coy about. I tried my best to get a bit more info out, but we'll just have to wait and see. The other one I'm going to mention, Graham, is the see-through laptop, which was featured by Lenovo, which I sort of thought was maybe this is going to be a bit of a gimmick. But when I actually saw it, and you can watch it on one of my LinkedIn videos if you want, it was actually pretty phenomenal. It is literally a laptop that you can see through. You can see through the screen to what's behind the screen. So if you put your hand behind the lid of the laptop, you can see your hand. Now, I thought maybe this is actually quite useful for certain types of professionals. For example, architects, engineers, people doing experiments where, they might want to have some sort of visibility of a real item versus a diagram that they're doing on their laptop. So I sort of thought actually really potentially quite useful in some cases. So those were two very interesting pieces of innovation. There was a lot more that was sort of less sexy, if you like, but more practical, like a lot of new fiber compression technology, which I thought was quite interesting, given the move to fiberization across so many countries. And also, Microsoft and Amazon were both talking about their API platforms for providing open gateway access to software providers to sort of put their products and services out over multiple telecom networks, which was not sexy to look at, but actually fundamentally really important to the industry's future.
Okay, well, that's a terrific wrap up. As you mentioned there, Mohammed, you've got some video and some more thoughts up on your LinkedIn page. That's a search for Lon Street Advisors on LinkedIn. That's advisors spelled with an O, not an E. And also, Mohammed, you'll be joining us at the Comms Day Summit on May the 1st, later this year, again to expand on some of these thoughts. And we look forward to having you there.
Thank you very much, Graham. I appreciate it.
Okay, moving on to the second half of this episode. As I mentioned at the top of this podcast, I caught up with Patrick Guerrera. Now, he's the founder and chief executive officer of the Re Group, part of MSC Saatchi, sort of the design and branding house of Saatchi, who, of course, are the famous advertising group. Now, in Australia, specifically, he works on the Optus account, but he did mention to me that his agency had also done a lot of work with Swisscom, so in Switzerland. So there's quite a sort of lengthy involvement of telecoms, but significantly, Patrick's not really a telecommunications executive. He looks at the world from his particular perspective of branding, marketing, design. And I thought it'd be good to catch up with him because he spent the week at MWC, and I guess he came back with some very interesting perspectives that he shared with us. Let's hear from him.
The major takeouts for me, kind of at a top line, were firstly from a what was the kind of the future and impact of Gen AI on not only telco but all sectors. And I mean, I've come back with more jargon for dinner table conversations than you would ever want, but just the conversation around digital agents, digital twins, how it's going to impact industries and smart factories. I mean, really, it's a telco conference, but it went so far beyond telco. Connectivity at its core, because all of this innovation is going to be delivered through connected networks. But ultimately, the first major takeout about is how this technology is going to impact all our lives, our customers, our industries, our workplaces. Like, not in a few years' time, like tomorrow. That would be my first takeout. Second takeout was just how important, there was a fantastic session I went to called Society First, which talked about how do we manage this new era, in particular in terms of, people already concerned about their jobs, the discussion of hybrid workforces, how we retrain our workforces in this new era, how we build trust with our workforces in this new era, and how we take true societal responsibility of how we're introducing this technology into our workplaces and into our communities. And some really deep thinking around that. And also, fantastic the leaders from the Global South talking about the fact that once this, once smartphones and connectivity and this technology is introduced into Africa and into Latin America, what that's going to mean in terms of the world and creativity and content, which was kind of astonishing and interesting and exciting and sometimes terrifying. I think thirdly, was the rise of quantum computing into the conversation, and that was something that I really didn't understand the potential impact of, when we move into a world where we're no longer just zeros and ones, but for those of you who might not really understand the potential of quantum, it's a really simple idea. Traditional computing is zeros and ones, but in quantum computing, there's zeros and ones and both. There's a great metaphor that if you think about computing as being zero on one side of a coin and one on the other side of the coin, quantum adds the spin of the coin, which creates a whole new potential. What happens when we merge our data with Gen AI and predictive AI and quantum computing? What happens in that world? Yeah. Not only in terms of customers and telco, but in terms of our society itself. And I think finally, what does it mean? What kind of connectivity and technology do we need to actually execute and deliver this technology and these huge data sets? Industrial 6G, private networks. What does it mean for 5G, 5.5G? How are we going to bring these experiences? Samsung has already, is already brought out a quantum handset, which is extraordinary, with a quantum chip in it. For those of you who don't know, a week and a half ago, Apple introduced quantum into its iMessage platform. So all of this is happening right now, And for us, from a marketing and advertising perspective, it means that the entire way we engage with customers, how we keep them safe, how we keep their data safe, how we use personalization in a commercially effective, impactful way to deliver our brands, but also in a way that respects and protects consumers. There is so much there for us as agency and marketing leaders to wrap our head around, like huge amounts. And to be completely honest, I don't think any of us are ready for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting point, because you're, as you just said, you're coming at it from an agency point of view. I talk to people in the inner core of telcos, CEOs, C-suite, and some of them appreciate that AI is coming, and they see an opportunity, but they speak of it very much in future tense. And there are others for whom it's just something happening on a faraway shore. But the message you've got, and I think it's a correct message, is that actually this is happening around us now. If you don't learn about it, don't understand how you need to adapt it for your business, you actually face some pretty bad consequences, don't you?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I have to be really honest. When people talk about AI at the moment in my world, or when I speak to my clients, it's always a conversation about creative efficiencies. And sure, that's true. And what's going to happen to jobs, and what jobs can be delineated and be replaced. And that conversation about protection is and efficiency. And sure, that's part of it. And that's why there was a lot of conversation about hybrid workforces, etc. But the reality is it's so much more than that in terms of the way data is going to be used and the power we're going to have over data and how that data and how we use data for good and the potential of that. I mean, the customer experiences is going to be true. It's the biggest revolution way beyond the internet. I mean, most people compared the current revolution that we're in to the printing press, not even to the birth and the birth of the internet.
Yeah.
For it to radically transform knowledge and nations. And the most interesting thing, for example, in terms of sector transformation, business transformation, is there's a telco alliance that was announced, or might have already been announced, but it was announced specifically about building a telco-specific LLM between... I mean, South Korea Telecom, Singtel, Deutsche Telecom, and a couple of others. I can't remember them all. But the scale of these telcos, millions of customers from consumer to enterprise, coming together to actually build an LLM that will be telco-centric to protect data sets. Because, for telcos, quantum and Gen AI, they have to wrap their hands around it, because the encryption piece and the security piece is so critical that if they don't lead, if they don't get in front, then bad actors and hackers and malware will get in front of them. So there's the time is like the clock is ticking for these organizations in terms of securing their data. So it's a real immediate tension. And I suppose from an agency perspective, it's important for us to understand our telco clients and what they'll be facing in terms of immediate customer needs and propositions and everything else, but it's so much more than that.
Yeah, just for the benefit of our listeners, that alliance comprises SK Telecom, Singtel, Deutsche Telecom, and SoftBank from Japan. So it's a very, very significant 1.3 billion customers across the world, which is an astonishing number, yes.
So when you think, because, I mean, the thing that kind of blew my mind a little, well, it didn't blow my mind, that's a bit of it, but a lot of the challenges that these organizations are facing in terms of kind of putting ethical and putting some guardrails around these technologies, it needs legislative and government engagement, because it's actually going to be about cross-border, cross-sovereignty challenges, because this is going to move beyond traditional borders. And so that's kind of really interesting in terms of the power and the potential and the kind of negotiation that's going to be required. Anyway.
Yeah, and we posed the question earlier, are the telcos and big industry ready for this? But that also poses another question, which is, are people at large ready for this? And particularly the more vulnerable members, even of affluent societies, people who perhaps don't have the flexibility in terms of job skills and so on to adapt. But also in the developing world, where these types of technologies can be both an opportunity and a threat at the same time. What are your thoughts on that?
Look, I think... This particular question, in all honesty, was what kept me up at night. When I go back to my hotel room, I go, because in that For Society presentation, there was a lot of discussion about this technology has the power to, there was this extraordinary optimistic kind of like kind of lens that everything was being delivered through, okay? And I have to be really open and say I was really suspicious about the optimism, because, there was a point, I made earlier on in this discussion where there is so much opportunity for connected devices to be put into the hands of, the broader African continent and Latin America and et cetera, et cetera, the global south. But at the same time, What is that actually going to mean? And I don't actually think the conference really answered that question. I don't think the conference really talked to what it talked about hybrid workplaces, retraining people, what new workforces are going to look like, but it didn't actually answer the question, well, what does it really look like for vulnerable people, people at risk, you know, people who are already, you know, losing their livelihoods, not only from Gen AI, but also from hacking and from bad actors. It didn't, for me, really have the right framework or really give us the answers to that. And that made me nervous.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Now, just in your preamble, you mentioned something which I think it's a really big issue here. And you're talking about the technology that's required to make this happen. And you know, it requires a lot of faith from investors, primarily. Mm. And the point was made by a few analysts, particularly of the financial ilk who came away from MWC, that one of the big question marks about all of this is that telcos who need to build the networks to support all this demand still need to do it from the paradigm of legacy revenues. You know, there aren't people knocking down the doors offering billions of dollars in credit for them to build the industrial networks, to build 5.5G, to build 6G, to build these AI factories. All these things that are required to make it happen have to be financed, and there has to be a business case for it. And that's something, I'm framing this question from the point of view that there is a general feeling amongst telcos that 5G has been a bit disappointing in terms of its return on investment. So what was your pickup there? Because this goes to the fundamental question as to whether all the rest of this is credible or not.
It's such a fantastic question. The point that was made is that Riyadh are smart cities, right? Yeah. And what they're doing is they're using the level of connectivity that they're offering. Their citizens. It becomes a point of national competitive advantage, yeah. Right? So when you talk about the point that, you know, telcos have struggled with getting the right ROI on their 5G investments, and just the sheer investment it requires, and like, you know, for those of us who understand telco revenue and profitability cycles, it usually takes 3 to 4 years before they get their profit kick out of the investment from 4G. You know, that's what happened with 4G, and that's what's happening with 5G. I think that, there's going to come a point where it's going to be almost financially impossible, both from a financial perspective and a return on investment and shareholder value perspective, but also the sheer scale and the requirements to keep the security around these networks intact. The sheer scale of these networks across borders as well, because, you know, you can talk about Australia and you can talk about New Zealand or whatever. But like what we heard is that this technology is going to be borderless. I mean, I thought the elephant in the room throughout this whole conference was exactly what Elon Musk is building through SpaceX, and the fact that he's building a satellite grid, which is you know, puts all of these networks at risk. But anyway,
I think just to pick you up on that last point there about satellite, I mean, you're in a sense describing only the start of it, because there's a number of these big satellite networks like Amazon, Kuiper, and there's a few of them going up, and OneWeb, they've already got 500 satellites, and they're already out there doing stuff. And I think it's a very interesting point just to take that one in isolation about satellite, because it's an unknown as to what impact it's going to have. And perhaps there's a possibility it might be more profound than the impact mobile has had, because satellite is ubiquitous across the entire landmass. So what does that do for the economics of urban density and all that kind of thing? In some ways, it flattens the playing field more than mobile does in many respects.
Well, it does, and it gives individuals and corporations astonishing power. I mean, you mentioned Amazon. Amazon showed up very strongly around their cloud, proposition, and if you think about it, the one point I probably left out earlier on in this is that there's data, there's Gen AI, there's quantum, but all of that is going to be, you know, except for, you know, near the data centers that need to build, but cloud power and capability becomes another critical part of it, which was discussed a lot. But anyway, I think that the satellite piece was kind of not discussed for whatever reason. But to me, I went to a particular conversation around leaving the planet and space travel and going to the moon, and they were discussing the importance of building 6G networks in space. And I was sitting there going, but why would you build a 6G network in space when you've got a whole lot of satellites with a whole lot of different capability? But anyway, I don't think, none of that technology was really kind of discussed. SpaceX wasn't really discussed.
Because it's territorial. It's a mobile industry conference. So those types of people aren't on the stage. That's as simple as that, really.
It is simple as that, but it's also as simple as, Apple was not at the conference.
Yeah.
Samsung was everywhere. Huawei was everywhere. It's interesting it was interesting who wasn't there. It was interesting who wasn't discussed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I thought
that was interesting.
Yeah, elephants in the room and invisible elephants in the room. There's two kinds, right? Yeah. Okay, so let's wrap up. If you wanted to sum it up, and I kind of want to take your temperature a bit here, I guess, if nothing else. Walking away from 4 days at this event, did you feel positive or negative about the trajectory of mobile communications?
I actually felt positive. I felt that strength of connectivity, depth of connectivity, and security of connectivity. I think there was a really kind of simple term of phrase that was used a number of times, that telcos are moving from telcos to tech codes, and that telcos more than ever are going to have a fundamental role in industry, more so than ever before. But Vicky Brady from Telstra made a really good point, is that one of the most important things that she's learning is that telcos are going to have to collaborate. Traditionally telcos have been these kind of guardrailed kind of bodies that had all the power and made all the decisions, and obviously they their partnerships were critical, but they were compounds. The future for telcos is that they will be core to business and industry and to nationhood, really. But they're going to have to collaborate more than ever before. They're going to have to work with other types of technology to stay relevant, to stay powerful, and to serve their customers. And I think that telco to tech co thing is probably really, really important, really interesting.
Okay, well, that's terrific. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your perspectives. And as I said at the start of the interview, the fact that you come from a slightly different background, advertising, the marketing, branding world, I think makes your perspectives really interesting for a telco audience. You just look at the world in a different way, and your perspectives are really valuable. Thank you.
Thank you, Graham.
Well, that was Patrick Herrera from Regroup, part of M&C Saatchi. Before that, we had Muhammad Chowdhury from Lawn Street Advisors. Both really interesting takeouts from MWC this year, and we'll try and catch up with both those fillers in the future to get their views on what's going on in the world of telecommunications. Well, that's it for Comms Day Live this week. I hope you enjoyed this special extended episode. Lots of things coming up in the next few weeks. Obviously, very, very big changes with NBN pricing in Australia, with 500 megabits per second to become the new hero category. We'll talk more about that in a future episode. Until then, take care.